Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2287. And I would like to ask the director of our Department of Agriculture, Katie Coba, to come up and walk us through this bill.
Oops.
Yes, just so folks know, the real chair of this committee, Representative Roblin, is at a conference for agricultural chairs with some of his colleagues from around the country in Washington, D.C. today.
Well, thank you and good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Katie Coba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. And the bill that you have in front of you, House Bill 2287, should be a very simple and straightforward bill. Basically, what this bill would do would be to amend our existing authority whereby we regulate labeling, purity, and marketing of commercial seeds, primarily grass seed and vegetable seeds, and add to that authority the regulation of flower seed. And this bill and another bill that you will hear today, which would give us authority to regulate bird feed, the driving issue behind this is the fact that we are seeing noxious weed seeds coming into Oregon in flower seeds. And so we would be doing the same thing that we currently do with our other seed products that we currently regulate, in that we are checking to make sure they're matching their labeling, that there aren't weeds present in those products that are of such a level that would cause us great concern. And believe it or not, we do see weed proliferation from flower seed. I don't want to go into great detail unless you've got some particular questions about anything. There is one piece that I think we'd like to bring to your attention that we found in the drafting of the bill that we believe is an error, and that would be to eliminate Section 16, which is the last section of the bill, which makes this effective on or after January 1st of 2009. And so we don't know why that got in there. I think we'd just like to eliminate the whole section. That would allow the bill to become effective upon passage and the standard waiting days that follow that, and then we can begin moving that into our program. To our knowledge, there is no opposition to this proposed statutory change. I'm not sure who all might have signed up to testify, but if they did, they can certainly speak for themselves. But we do know that, in particular, the Oregon Seed Trade Association, the Oregon Seed Council, the Invasive Species Council all support this change to our law.
Great. Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Coba, is the problem from plant seed that it is sold as an ornamental, which itself, in fact, is invasive or noxious, or is it contamination of seeds that are otherwise benign, but which somebody isn't being careful about what's getting combined in, or maybe these meadow in a can things you see sold that which are a whole, supposed to be a range of different kinds of plants.
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, it is the meadow in the can kind of experience what we're seeing, and it's really a fairly new phenomenon as we're seeing more and more of this, that within that can of flowers there are also noxious weed seeds, and it's just a matter of setting standards and then monitoring to make sure that we're reducing the impact of those kinds of seeds and getting out and about.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Question. Other states, I'm assuming other states have this same policy, and so we're essentially falling in line. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, that is correct. Other states, as flower seed and the popularity of flower seed has proliferated, have gone ahead and made changes to their statutes along these same lines. So we are just in alignment with what is happening in other states. I know I had the figure of 25 states. I'm not sure if that was on the flower seed or the bird feed, but same concept.
Okay.
Wow.
Any further, Representative Boquist?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking here at the limitations on page 2 of the bill. It talks about 1 pound or more. Does this impact internet sales? Is that like an exclusion or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, let me have Ron Pence, who's actually from our Commodity Seed Division, come up, and he can probably answer that question better than I can, since I can't answer the question. So, Ron, if you would come up and then just introduce yourself for the record.
Welcome.
It's early in the session to be punting already.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, my name is Ron Pence of Oregon Department of Agriculture. I'm Assistant Administrator of Commodity Inspection Division. Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, to answer your questions, it would affect internet sales as well. All internet sales are required to be licensed by the department if they're selling seed within the state of Oregon.
And the second half of the question, if you would, Mr. Chair. Poundage, I'm looking at section 2, line 27, and there's it talks about or more than 1 pound of flower seeds. So are we talking, is there an envelope or is there a threshold on this? It appears to me there's a threshold.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, essentially most of the small packet seeds come in a very small portion of an ounce. And so I'm not sure what the threshold would packages over 1 pound is generally would be considered as almost a commercial sell because it's very rarely sold to the public in those quantities.
Follow, Mr. Chair?
You bet.
So it appears to me that what we're talking about is packaged seeds would not have to have a disclaimer label on it, and packages above the size of 1 pound would be required to have a label on it. Is that, am I reading this correctly?
Mr. Chair, I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, I think that is the section that actually speaks specifically to the labeling requirements, and then there are other sections that speak to different parts of what we do to these seeds when we get our hands on them. So it sounds like if it's greater than 1 pound, they have to have labeling requirements that maybe wouldn't be required on those smaller packages. But we do other things to the smaller packages. Still test them.
I guess follow up, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
I'm just trying to clarify here. I'm not in disagreement. I'm trying to figure out what we're saying here in the labeling section, that small envelopes wouldn't necessarily have a printed label discussing seed contamination in it, but those that are packaged in containers larger than 1 pound or in commercial quantities are required to have a labeling on it.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, because if you go on then to Section 3, it talks about flower seed that does have a net pound of 1 pound or a net weight of 1 pound or less, and it looks like there's some different requirements there. So I think if it's a bigger quantity, it has a certain set of requirements as outlined in Section 2, and then if it's less than 1 pound, the requirements are outlined in Section 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I had a question as well, Katie. When we talk about kind of checking to see if noxious weeds are in the seed, that's obviously some sort of inspection process. We're not checking everything, I'm sure, in Oregon, so there's some sort of sampling that goes on. And are these type of seeds commonly sold in the places of the other inspections, or are we going to be going into new types of locations, stores, and venues that we haven't been in before as a state?
Mr. Chair, and Ron can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is these are the same venues that we're in otherwise doing other kinds of seed tests. So these people know us. They've seen us. We're just gathering a few more samples.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay, we've got a few folks to testify, so I'm going to let the director go. And for now, I think we have two more bills, so we'll have her up again. And I'd like to call Dave Nelson from the Oregon Seed Council.
Chairman, I also have Mr. Hayes from the Oregon Seed Trade Association.
Oh, would you both?
That
yeah.
Will get us two birds with one stone.
That's our entire list, so that would be great. Welcome, Mr. Hayes.
Thank you.
And this is, you'll both probably say it for the record again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Nelson of the Oregon Seed Council. I'd like to say hello to Beth. We worked together many years ago when she was a committee administrator, and I saw her appear at one of your first hearings and introduce herself. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Frankly, we just had said, we'll come up here and me too, Director Koba, and say this is a good bill that we have all looked at through the course of the last year as the department was preparing it. Flower seeds do, and as Director Koba said, bird seed packaging does introduce the possibility of noxious weeds coming into the state, and since Oregon is the grass seed capital of the world, that introduces, and Representative Boquist has the largest geographic chunk of grass seed produced in the world, introduces the possibility of noxious weed problems in that very important industry. And let me just give you an example of several years ago when, as tall fescue production expanded in the Willamette Valley, tall fescue did not exhibit any tendency to have a fungus disease called rust. It was immune to it, but somebody brought in some rust from some place, which expanded throughout the tall fescue production, which is now over 100,000 acres, and that imported rust particle spore now costs the grass seed industry close to $6 million annually to prevent from being a contaminant or a production problem. So trying to intersect introduction of noxious weeds into the valley is an important thing for the seed industry. And we do support the adoption of regulations on wildflower seed. We did have and do have still some production of wildflower seed blends, particularly in the Silverton Hills, that are marketed out of here. And so it's important that seed stock coming in, as well as ornamental packages of seed stock that come in, have regulation, or at least are required to not contain noxious weeds that give us problems.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
My name is Dennis Hayes. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Oregon Seed Trade Association. We have about 85 seed company members, whereas Dave represents the growers. Our members are the dealer companies that work with the growers. And most of them are the ones that were referred to earlier. They grow turf seed, forage seed, vegetable seeds, some of them overseed flower seeds as well. So you're talking about people that do all those seeds, and that our organization, our members, are willing to see this put into the law so that you ensure good quality products.
Members, any questions for these gentlemen? All right. Thank you for your testimony. That's the end of this list. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify about this bill? If not?
No.
Yes, please. Yeah, welcome. Just state your name and has its name and address, or name and organization for the record, please.
Mike Billman, S&S Seeds, Wildflower Production and Distribution Company here in the Willamette Valley. And I actually do support the bill with some possible minor changes, and it has to do with the labeling of percentages. And as I read the bill at this point in time, in a mixture of wildflower seeds, under 5% need to be labeled as other crop seeds, even though it's a seed that I intended to put into the mixture at 2 or 4%. In wildflower seeds, we have very differing sizes. Mm-hmm. So when we label them by percentage of weight, in a mixture of 20 species of flower seeds, 10 of those can be under 5%.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Chair, can you just run that by me one more time?
Yeah, give us one more shot at it.
Okay. To the way I read the bill, to label it legally, if one of my species is under 5% of the mixture, it needs to be labeled as an other crop seed in the mixture, not as an intended ingredient in the wildflower mixture.
And can you just highlight for me sort of roughly where you're seeing that part so we can follow along? And we're getting some answers, I think, to your thing while you...
Section 2, item 1.
Oh. So, yeah, right. Lines 32, 33, 34.
No, 24, 25, 26. In excess of 5% of the
whole. That must be an old.
Oh, I think you're seeing a different one, but I see the section you're talking about. Sure. The commonly accepted name, holy flower.
So where is it?
If I,
so our current law talks about agricultural seed components constituting in excess of 5%. Mm-hmm. This adds flower seeds into what we're doing on agricultural seeds, and you're discussing whether 5% is essentially the appropriate level.
Yes, I feel that's not the appropriate level because we often intend to put 2% of a species into the flower mixtures. In the grasses, they're dealing with more common seed sizes, so under 5% is considered a contaminant in a grass mixture.
Mm-hmm.
In a flower mixture, it can be an intended ingredient.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Boquist.
Just for clarification, I think I understand what you say. What, how you're reading the law or how you perceive the law is enforced now is if it's 5% or less, it's just this blank label is put on it saying it's other.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to be able to do, correct me if I'm wrong, is to ensure that you can say 2% of it is Whiskey River,
exactly.
Orange flower, whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for clarification, Mr. Chair, but I think Department of Ag kind of needs to respond to that one.
Okay. And just from a process standpoint, we are establishing just sort of the public record, so we don't have to solve every problem here. There will be a work session, but we're getting your concerns on the record. And if the director would like to comment initially, but we can still have additional conversations with folks afterwards.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think the issue here is that we are adding it to existing law, and existing law has the 5% reference. So what we'd like to do, I think, is just try to work after this hearing and see if there isn't some way we can structure this to make it work.
Thanks. Sure. Any sounds good to folks?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, sir. Any further good ideas out there? All right. Then I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2287 and open the House Bill on, open the public hearing on House Bill 2289. Director Koba.
Again, for the record, Katie Koba, Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and House Bill 2289 is basically the exact same concept that we just discussed, although it deals with bird feed. The department currently has the authority to regulate animal feed, so everything from large livestock feed to cat and dog, fish, what have you. We currently go into the market and pull samples and make sure it meets requirements as laid out in statute. What this would do would add bird feed, which is intended for use to feed wild birds, which has also grown in popularity, add that to our statute so that we could also regulate bird feed because it is another source of noxious weeds coming into our state. And I have some very exciting information to share with you. We actually had some work that was done over in Baker County whereby some bird feed was sampled and they found such things as 1,398 seeds of bristlegrass in 1 pound of bird feed, 950 seeds of pigweed, 1,078 seeds of cochia, and 105 seeds of Russian thistle. So we do know that we are getting noxious weeds coming in through bird feed. Again, we would take this authority, set standards for what is acceptable and not acceptable in terms of weed seeds in bird feed.
And just a quick question, who did that study?
It was done by Baker County Weed Control District.
Okay. And then I saw in the background paper that the Oregon State University, I might mention, Sun Bowl champion, College World Series champion, and Beavers did a study as well.
Yeah. Go Beavers. I think this was done in conjunction with OSU.
Okay. Yeah. I was just hoping, to be honest.
And again, Mr. Chair, we know of no opposition. The Oregon Seed Trade Association, Oregon Seed Council, and the Oregon Feed and Grain Association have expressed support for this bill.
Any initial questions? Representative Maurer.
Absolutely. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Boquist.
I'm just hoping that those OSU students didn't have to use microscopes to find all the seeds. But having said that, I see this may have, at least downstairs, saying this may have a fiscal impact. Can you address this? This is a slightly larger commodity. At least when I go to Walmart, I see big bags of the seed, which, you know, pollute my crops too. So, can you comment on the fiscal and how to enforce this, and the fact that, as you mentioned in testimony, we do already have a known problem?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist, we have indicated a fiscal of, it looks like, $1,840 in 07-09 for business license fees. Businesses have to pay a license fee for distributing product. I understand. Richard, do you want to come up just in case I mess this up? Most of these businesses already have a license fee with us, mm-hmm. from the other products that they distribute. Mm-hmm. So we would do that under that existing fee. But if there was a new business, they would have the fee to pay. And I'm just going to look at Richard Ten Eyck, who is with our agency, and have him introduce himself and confirm that I gave you the right answer.
Mr. Chairman, Richard Ten Eyck, feed specialist with the Oregon Department of Ag. Katie's essentially correct. The law will bring a few brokers into the equation that handle basically like straight striped sunflower seed that's not currently a commodity that would regulate as a feed, so they would have to pay $100 a year fee for the privilege of marketing their product here. So we'd pull a few people in that way.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up question?
Yep.
I'm looking at your testimony. So the bill provides an exemption from registration and labeling for wild bird feed consisting of unmixed seed. Can you explain that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boquist. Right now, when the company ships a bag of black oil sunflower, it's just going to say sunflower seeds. In a true commercial feed label, it would have to guarantee crude protein, crude fat, and crude fiber, and have an ingredient statement. The way the commodities are traded as a single seed, it really wouldn't be necessary. So this leaves the labeling requirements that they're operating under today in place for those whole seeds that aren't mixed with anything else.
Yes.
So
we're not providing an exemption, so we're only closing half a loophole. This is just a labeling exemption.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Maurer?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Is there an expected impact on consumers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I'm thinking you're thinking an increase in the price of the bird feed.
Yes, my district has a significant number of senior citizens who love the birds.
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, I would think that given the limited fiscal, shouldn't be a major burden on these companies if they're not already licensed under us to pay the $100 annual fee to have the privilege of seeing us in their building.
And therefore not passing it on, hopefully. Mm-hmm. We'll see. $100. Any additional questions? For the director, we do have some folks to testify as well, so we may learn more there. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Katie Fast of the Oregon Farm Bureau, and I think Dave just stepped out. So, Dennis, would you like to come back up, Oregon?
Right. Yeah. Good afternoon, Chair Klim, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We'd like to add our support to this bill. As you've heard, definitely concerns from the agriculture community on wild bird feed being a vector for noxious weeds. This has a great deal of cost for the industry and also the state for control of noxious weeds. And I know the committee received a few days ago kind of a status on our noxious weed and invasive species program at the Department of Agriculture. And of interest to add, this issue has actually come up through our grassroots policy at the Oregon Farm Bureau level of concern from our membership, and I think a lot of that was spurred out of the study that came from Baker County. So we'd just like to add our support to the bill and happy to answer any questions.
Any initial questions for Katie? Thank you, Dennis.
I wear a different hat on this one. I represent the Oregon Feed and Grain Association, which is made up of feed manufacturers, ingredients, and grain companies. And our members are the ones that would manufacture the animal feeds that are used in the state. And bird feed.
Say your name, sir. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Just one more time for the record. Great.
Yeah.
With, in this case, Oregon Feed.
Oregon Feed and Grain Association.
Great. Thank you very much.
And I know that the state looked at the law in other adjacent states on this issue because every state was having a problem with this. And Idaho and Washington do have a law. And our members are hopeful that this will enable them to handle bird feed on a regional basis by having all three or four states, like California as well, doing the same law. And it's important that bird feed is under the state's direction so that we're guaranteed that the people selling that have a quality product and it's the label meets what's in the bag. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay.
Thank
you both very much. And Michael Billman. Oh, okay. No problem. Is there anybody else like to testify on this bill or participate in the public hearing? Okay, seeing none, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2289 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2292.
Mr. Chair, I'm having joining me for this bill Dalton Hobbs, who's Assistant Director for the agency, and the Commodity Commission. As we fondly say in our agency, falls under his circle. So I'm going to have him talk about this bill and what it does.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Hobbs.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Dalton Hobbs, Assistant Director of Agriculture for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I'm here to talk about House Bill 2292. In essence, what this does is it makes permanent the majority of changes that the Oregon Commodity Commission program had made to it during the 2003 legislative session. In 2003, legislature responded to concerns that were about on First Amendment challenges to many of the national generic marketing promotion programs, such as beef, it's what's for dinner, or got milk. And Oregon's 28 commodity commissions at the time requested changes that were to their enabling statutes 576, 577, and 578. Those changes were developed along with advice from the Department of Justice Legislative Council and were embodied in Senate Bill 854. In general, these amendments that were added, this legislation provided that oversight by the Department of Agriculture be given to Commodity Commission's plans and projects, and these are primarily speech-related marketing and messaging. And it also called for the appointment of public members to each of the commodity commissions. The amendments allow Oregon's commissions to continue to do generic marketing, research, and education without concern about First Amendment-based challenges that other commissions out throughout the United States had faced in other states. When it was written, a few of Oregon's commissions thought that by offering a refund of all or part of their mandatory assessment would provide an additional level of protection against legal challenges. And at the request of those commissions, and that is the Alfalfa Seed, the Grains Commission, and Wheat Commission, the refund was added and exempted those commodity commissions from ODA review of the speech aspects of their programs, and also exempted them from the necessity of adding a public member. House Bill 2292 was developed in concert and with the significant input from Oregon's commissions, and represents what we believe is their current desire. What it does is it makes permanent the ODA's ability to review, approve, or disapprove plans and projects that relate to speech of commodity commissions. It makes permanent that each commission have a public member. And the provisions for exemption of review, approval, or disapproval of plans and projects and the requirement for a public member when the alfalfa seeds and grains commissions adopt rules allowing for an assessment refund. And it makes permanent also that the Oregon Beef Council have a public member. It does, 2292 does extend the clause, the sunset clause, for the Oregon Wheat Commission. They felt that they wanted a little longer to have that sunset in place. And it also extends the clause that requires the Wheat Commission to have public members. And it extends a clause that allows the Wheat Commission to offer a refund in lieu of having a public member. In conclusion, 2292, we believe, is supported by Oregon's commodity commissions. It benefits producers and processors by allowing them to continue their operations as commissions, their ability to collect mandatory assessments, to do generic promotion, research, and education without concern of getting sued for First Amendment violations. Be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
Okay, I've got John McCulley and Dave Nelson. Dave, I think, is still out of the room. So, and then so Mike Dewey.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm the administrator of the Oregon Clover Commission, the Oregon Orchard Grass Seed Producers Commission, and the Oregon Processed Vegetable Commission, none of whom lobby here, but I just wanted you to hear the perspective from those commissions on this bill. They, as well as all the other commissions in the state, are supporting this measure. It has been in effect for several years now, and I'm pleased to report to you that we have a public member on all of the commodity commissions. The three commissions that I named have really benefited by having a public member serve on the commission. I think there was a little hesitancy at first, but the commissions have really embraced the public member, and it's been very helpful, I think, to all of the commissions. As far as the oversight with the Department of Agriculture goes, we're fully compliant with that and agree that that needs to continue. For some, there was a concern that it would be burdensome to contact the Department of Agriculture whenever we had an advertisement going out or some type of publication. But we have had very good cooperation from the department. It's gone very smoothly, and I think that in light of the protections that that process provides us, it's very important to keep that. One part of Senate Bill 854 was a requirement that a survey be conducted because there were concerns about the impact of the measure. And that survey was to ask the producers who pay the assessment how they felt about their commission, how they felt about Oregon Department of Agriculture oversight, and how they felt about a refund. And I can report to you that, having seen a summary of all of those surveys, the commodity commissions are held in very high regard by the people who pay the assessments. There was support for the Department of Agriculture oversight, and there was not support for a mandatory refund. So overall, the commission system has a high level of satisfaction among the people who benefit from it, and we urge your adoption of this measure.
Great. Thank you very much. Mike?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike Dewey representing the Oregon Fire Commission and the Oregon Potato Commission. I've had the opportunity to be around commodity commissions in this building for, this will be the 34th year. The Oregon Wheat Commission is the first commission in the United States, so Oregon has led the way with commodity commissions. And obviously, you've had prior testimony with regard to some lawsuits and First Amendment issues, and I won't get into those. But we worked last session on Senate Bill 854 to attempt, and we think we've done a very good job of collaboration with all the parties to ensure that the commodity commissions can exist pretty much the way they had in previous years. I had liked and I had advocated for the public member because I think that gives a different perspective. Sometimes you get a little bit too
internal and enclosed in terms of your thinking, because you're all in the same business. And by and large, the Commodity Commission's like the public member. The oversight, there was concern about oversight, but we recognized in order to continue the government speech, we needed that. There's always going to be some discussions about costs, but we could have those discussions with the Department of Revenue. Excuse me, the Department of Agriculture. I would say I'd like to thank the department for moving this bill at least to you in terms of getting it introduced. The March 1, 2009 date that would have modified in terms of what was being sunsetted was kind of negotiated and problematic in the sense that we would be in session and we might not be able to pass the bill by March 1, and you kind of have some issues about retroactivity and the like. So I'm saying to you that the industry, Commodity Commission's work, they're self-help organizations. We want to continue to help them work, and this bill does that. So I urge your support, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mike. Any questions for the gentleman?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative
McPherson. I'm not sure that this is a question for these witnesses necessarily, but they're before me, so I'll put it to them. I'm curious about this special arrangement for the Grains Commission and the Alfalfa Seed Commission that allows refunds in lieu of having a public member, and where apparently this change is eliminating a sunset.
What?
Sounds like forever.
Eliminating a sunset that otherwise exists under the bill, although I can't quite track it under the bill language. But what's the policy behind this refund in lieu of a public member?
Mr. Chair, I'm representing McPherson. I'll try this. It is hard to follow sunsets and how they're written into the statute. And sometimes they're convoluted, but nonetheless, that's the form and substance. There was a discussion amongst a number of the commissions in order to avoid the oversight by the department, concerns about the oversight and perhaps whether or not they wanted a public member, there was discussion about having a refund for the marketing effort that particular commission does. So an individual had the opportunity to petition the commission and say, I want a refund for a percentage of what I paid in for that constituted marketing. And the sense was that if you had that, you would be immune from any law. You're never immune from a lawsuit, but the plaintiffs would probably not win a lawsuit because you had a provision for a refund. It wasn't a mandatory assessment for the 100% of what you paid. And so I think it was more of, we have some folks that are concerned about this, and at some point in time we want to have the statutory ability to offer a refund. Otherwise, they couldn't do it under the previous statutes. So a couple of commissions wanted to go down that road. And I think they're still in transition in terms of what they want to do, and they think it's a little bit premature to take some of the sunsets off. That's what I've been hearing. Hopefully that answers your question.
If I could ask for a clarification.
So certainly.
Let me just recite what I think I'm hearing. So the idea is that everyone who is growing alfalfa seed, for example, pays an assessment in that the commission has control over, and the we will not require that there be a public member on that commission or participating in how the decision about how those funds are expended. If anyone who's a grower of alfalfa seed says, no, I want my share back.
Mr. Chair, yes. That is essentially correct, and I'll just go a little bit further in the sense that, you know, for the record here, the alfalfa grower today is required to pay the assessment, whatever that is. And at some point in time, the entity may decide to offer a refund, and at that point in time, they would say, well, we don't have to have a public member any longer, and we don't need to have oversight of our marketing because we're returning those dollars to that individual. So I don't know if that, maybe I made it even worse for us, but...
I think I have the picture. Thank you.
And Representative McPherson, I have a feeling the philosophy behind it, because on our orchard, we're part of a couple of commissions, depending on the fruit. I think each crop or each set of crops, they sort of have their own, you know, philosophy and truce and peace on this issue. And there isn't necessarily a state interest in saying all commodities, you know, it's their money, and then they are doing this in kind of their own little democratic way, and having this discussion, electing people, and there may be differences between them and the state setting the policy that they're all going to be treated equally. When they may decide to go down a different road, it's hard to pick which crop you would say should and shouldn't. So you let them decide on their own, because it's, you know, each person's their own assessments off their own crop.
You know, if I may, each of these entities kind of understood what the parameters were. The AG and the Department of Agriculture set out, if you want to be, in their opinion, immune from, based on the court cases, this is the way you should go. And some thought, well, okay, that's fine, but maybe we want to go a different direction later, and that gives them that opportunity.
Thank you.
Any additional questions?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We've got one more person. This is Kay Teasel. Had it right the first time. Welcome. If you just state your name and if there's an organization you're with for the record, or an address if not.
Kay Teasel, Executive Director of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to offer our support for House Bill 2292. It's been a positive experience having a public member on the Beef Council, and we welcome the oversight of the Oregon Department of Ag. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Boquist.
Just out of humor, obviously they like the Department of Ag, but Fish and Wildlife and the Wolf aren't welcome in them over there, are they?
We'll save that for another time.
That's right. Not seeing a question there, I think I will move on.
They aren't going to introduce wolves in the discussion?
I'm working on it on the biofilms, but I just couldn't get it.
Any further questions? All right, thank you, Kay.
Thank you.
With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2292. That is the end of our list of bills. Any other business for the good of the order? I will adjourn our House committee. Thank you. Okay.